Okay, we are back for episode 310. Joe, another week, another indictment.
Yeah, they just keep coming.
This emanating from the great state of Georgia. A grand jury in Georgia voted to indict Donald Trump this Monday, or this past Monday, over his efforts to expose the 2020 election debacle, I guess you could say. Well, actually, they phrased it to overturn the election. He was making efforts. Even Fannie Willis, the district attorney down there, says he had the right to challenge the election and the methods that he chose were legal, but nevertheless, they're illegal. A 41-count indictment levied by Fannie Willis, a district attorney for Georgia's Fulton County, includes violating Georgia's RICO Act. He's a mobster now. Solicitation of violation of oath of office of a public officer. Conspiracy to commit impersonating a public officer. Conspiracy to commit forgery in the first degree, conspiracy to commit false statements and writings. That's interesting. False statements. How do you prove that? Conspiracy to commit filing false documents, conspiracy to commit forgery in the first degree, filing false documents. That's what, like suing in court. Solicitation of violation of oath of office, oath by a public officer. The DA also charged 18 others, including the White House, Trump's White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows. Attorneys Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis, Kenneth Chisbaro, Jeff Clark, and John Eastman. So she's basically she's claiming that his lawyers were co-conspirators of this RICO plot to overturn the election by challenging the election. Basically, we've had four indictments. Is that right? Four?
Yeah.
Against Trump, all of them are ridiculous. They're ridiculous charges if you just look into it. There is, from what I can, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm looking at it doesn't seem to be any legal basis for the indictments other than what the these various DAs and federal, like Mr. Clark, they're inferring crimes or trying to make up crimes by interpreting Trump's thoughts or motivations, which is very highly subjective. Of course, the indictments violate the constitutionality, protected civil liberties like free speech, these things. All the indictments amount to an assertion that basically that to accuse Democrats with election fraud in an election is a felony, but it's okay to make that accusation of Republicans. If I recall the past, 7 years since 2016. Attempts were made to overturn election, encourage faithless electors, accused Donald Trump of working with Putin to overturn an election. Of course, it turns out that conspiracy was hatched by the FBI, the Hillary Clinton campaign, with the help of foreign intelligence assets, and also our own intelligence community, which is with a real crime there. But the fact of the matter is that the charges of electoral fraud are as old as elections. I think every election cycle has had it. One charge, of election fraud, if not election in general, but in various states. John F. Kennedy got to the White House because of what happened in Chicago, right? There were questions about George Bush in 2000, 2004. Whatever you make of those controversies, no one was ever charged with a crime for making the accusation that there were some shenanigans involved in this stuff. So nevertheless, they seem to have crossed the Rubicon to try to criminalize political opposition. There's no really nothing no nothing really substantive to the charges. When you actually listen to the prosecutors, Alvin Bragg is trying to, I think, charge Trump for what it would be a federal offense. You have, of course, this lady down there, Fannie Willis, who's claiming that simply to challenge an election, to make phone calls, ask state officials, whether the governor or the secretary of state, to look into election fraud, these things, to sue in court, and to make statements are crimes. So there we are. I mean, obviously, they're trying to sort of more or less criminalize the political opposition, make it so Trump can't run, and basically, however. These are finally, worked out, litigated in the courts. It'll be after the 2024 election. So.
Right. I think actually they're designed to damage Trump's chances in the election. I think that would be the primary political purpose of them is that these things will roll along. There'll be revelations, and race is such a huge part of this. I mean, I don't know if you caught Fannie Willis's speech, but I mean, basically, she was just saying that Trump owns a plantation and, we're not going to take it any longer. And so it amounts to, like someone like Fannie Willis is really, I think, important to study. I don't know if you've caught any of her speeches or statements and things, but, to be as charitable as I can, this woman is not mentally qualified to be an attorney, let alone a district attorney. I mean, it is farcical, right? And so she is able to be controlled because, as I see her, my opinion of her is that she's just not analytically quick on the uptake. And so there's someone above her who's maneuvering. These aren't, her decisions. So they have some organization that is putting the, that looks at the activity, comes up with some, just any kind of excuse to create an indictment over, and then just presents it to her, and then she just brings it to, actually goes to court, gets it, and brings it to the public. So what really it's like, very similar in my mind, is kind of Soviet era show trials, where everyone knew, that the whole thing was just a political theater, and most of the apparatchiks involved with it really didn't have much understanding what they were doing. They were just following orders. So the Democratic Party is sort of revealing itself in an interesting way as just being, a system that can control people with low levels of intelligence and then maneuver them into, whatever activity they want.
How much of it is Trump derangement syndrome?
Yeah, a bit of it. I think actually there's, in my mind, there's very little of that. I don't think that's a real thing. I think that Willis just does what she's told, and I think at the top, they know better. They don't really have Trump derangement. These are the people who, Time magazine wrote the article about.
Yes.
So you have
This is the Molly Ball piece in February
exactly. So
2021.
you have really, high level intellects who are very, very malevolent, and are nihilists. They, as far as they're concerned, nothing matters except obtaining political power for our tribe. There is no morality that matters except for that. That
So
is
it's pure like Machiavellian power
yeah,
politics.
100%. So that's who is controlling Fannie Willis, and so the public stares at this, and it's incoherent. The only people who could find sort of purchase in what she's saying are the actual people who do have Trump derangement syndrome. The ones that on the left who, orange man bad, just axiomatic, kind of they just don't see any other reality other than he represents the white male. The white male is evil. Trump is evil. And so because he's evil, these charges are all correct or at least appropriate, and we're not upset about it. I would hope that more people will take the attitude that Colton Moore, he's the Georgia Republican state senator, and he said, basically that what they're doing is illegal, which is correct. It's a weaponization of the justice system.
Republicans control the state legislature and the governor's office down there, right? So they have the political agency and the power to do something about this problem. If I understand, there's a law in Georgia on the books that allows a sitting governor to remove a prosecutor for abuse of power. And this could be a clear, I mean, at this point, because I
100%.
mean, you
I
can't
mean,
argue the finer points of the law here. She's not building a case on any law. It's just some of these broad baseless assertions. So that's clearly an abuse of power.
no,
So
they should
as a
arrest
political
her.
move, the governor should remove her because it's
They
in
should
power
remove her
politics.
and charge her with crime, which is basically a violation of free speech and also of fair process of election. There's all kinds of laws which protect.
You talk about election interference for Pete's
Right,
sake.
that's right. That
Jeez.
protect people. Right, exactly. So they should say, okay, well, here, you wanted to arrest Trump, we're going to arrest you. And the case against her would be, a much more realistic one. Now, this would
But isn't there a
set off.
lady named Stacey Abrams who lives in Georgia who claimed she was the governor when Kemp had
Yes.
won? Right.
Well, sure, of course. Well,
Okay.
I mean, the hypocrisy is no longer relevant. I
Well, at
mean,
this
it's
point, it's almost boring to trite
yeah.
to point it out. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think forget about that stuff. The
But what
Georgians,
about? But what about? But what about? Come on, we're past.
right. The Georgians should just arrest her and try to put her in jail, because this is truly an egregious and obvious abuse of power. There's millions of laws they could use. Now, this would set off an enormous political firestorm, and I would just say that would be where the nation has to be at this point. There has to be passion, because you can see that they are setting up a Soviet-style dictatorship,
Yeah, you
right?
can't be
Of
feckless in your
America.
response to this stuff. They're being,
Yeah.
I mean, the House of Representatives, their committee, Jim Jordan's committee on the weaponization of government, should subpoena Fannie Willis and Alvin Bragg, and even Clark, and even and also the or the Attorney General and the
They should
FBI.
charge it. They should charge. I mean, look, what I'm saying is, you know me, I no one could be more reasonable and sweet. But here you have to fight. And so how do you fight? Well, just get it right out
Well,
into the
is the
public.
Attorney General of the state of Georgia a Republican? I would assume he is, right? I would look it
Yeah,
up. I know
I'm
this.
not
I know the Lieutenant Governor is, the Secretary of State is. Now, of course, these people don't like Trump because Trump accused them of covering up the fraud of 2020. Nevertheless, again, asserting election fraud and claiming you had won legitimately, and that legitimate victory had been deprived you from election fraud is not a crime. Whatever you think of that, of Trump's views of on that, on the 2020 election, it's not a crime, nor is it a crime to sue in court and hire lawyers and strategize and to to scrutinize the way the ballots were counted, because we all know how messy that was within 2020. So, like I said, there are Republicans, if they're sincere about fighting this, do have a fair amount of power to
Of
respond,
course they do.
and
Remember our discussions when we was coming up to the time when the Electoral College was going to act. We had many discussions about Trump has the power. He has the ability to simply, claim that, the election was fraudulent. I have enough evidence to make certain of that. And as the ex in my power of the executive branch, I'm just going to put in my own electors. And there was. There was he didn't need to go through the rigmarole with Pence. I mean, he could have actually just done it, but the fact is, it just as part of the theater, the Republicans play nice and get beaten up and slapped around, and the Democrats play dirty and always win. This is kind of the world that we're in at this point,
They're
where.
claiming it was a crime for him to tell Pence that he had the ability not to certify the election, even though the requirement to certify an election implies the power not to certify, right? Otherwise, then it's not a certification.
I
People
would. I
say
mean,
there's no, I think they changed the law afterwards, so that would suggest that Pence did have that power. But I'm saying, just if you are called in to certify an election and you have evidence of rampant election fraud, then you shouldn't certify the election. And there are, like I said, there are political solutions to this, one of which you alluded to is the fact that the various states that were in dispute, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, were all controlled by Republican legislatures. They had the capacity, the power, in fact,
should
the
have forced
plenary
back,
authority to appoint
should have
their own
been forced
electors.
back to the state
Yeah,
legislatures.
according to like Fannie Willis, and according to Mr. Clark, the U.S. attorney, and according to the Democrats, that's a crime, even though it's in the Constitution.
Yeah, right. Well, again, I mean, Molly Ball and the people who were working to make sure that the right person was elected, they don't. They're able to interpret the Constitution in any way they want. Remember, these are sophists. They don't go by, ordinary understanding of language. That language just means whatever they want
No,
it.
they invoke things like insurrection and
Yeah, of
these
course.
things. Call it an insurrection, which is a protest, and they'll so and if they say it, it's true. Apparently, they can actually change reality, spin a narrative, if you will, like calling January 6 an attempted insurrection to overthrow the government, which is
Right. It's just
absurd.
ludicrous, but and then here we are now. And the Republicans shouldn't have put up with that, and they shouldn't have put up with, of course, the election shenanigans. And here we are. This is sort of the continuation of the impotence, and what you get when you don't stand up to these tyrants. And it will just get worse and worse. I don't know what they have in mind for the presidential race, but I think it's just going to be spectacular. I mean, I think we will see drama at a high level. I mean, I mean, it's kind of amazing to imagine what could happen, during that process. I mean, the nation could literally split apart.
Well, you have a situation where they're willing to tear the nation apart over these bogus indictments when they simply just let it go, right? Same with
Yeah.
January 6th. They had that whole bogus January 6th committee. Then you had the prosecutions of like 1,100 people thrown in jail. Lives are ruined just to spin a narrative. And again, it has nothing to do with reality. They simply just told a tale, and they literally prosecuted people based on a tale.
Moreover, they actually created the theater. I mean, Nancy Pelosi and her daughter were organizing this theatrical presentation of an insurrection that, even though it didn't exist, I mean, they all went down there. The Democrats were all hidden in a bunker, right, being filmed in terror of losing, political the ability to process the Constitution. It was just theater. The whole thing was just nonsense, but this is how evil they are. I mean, to do so, think about that. Think about how evil you have to be to try to create a pseudo insurrection, right? Just for the purpose of ossifying your own political power. I mean, this is really Soviet style stuff. This is just the high trust society that America was in the 50s and 60s. Man, that is in the rear
Well, there's
view.
no sense of loyal opposition, and
Yeah, I'll
you don't
say.
prosecute your opponents the moment you seize power. And again, they're willing to tear the country apart because, I mean, more than half the country looks at these indictments as completely bogus. What does that do to the legitimacy of the system? I mean, it's like, and then to more or less basically criminalize political opposition, protesting. Obviously, the people who were protesting January 6th saw themselves simply protesting what they thought was a fraudulent election. They had witnessed what occurred that year prior in 2020 with all the BLM and Antifa riots, mostly peaceful rioting where cities were burned, property, massive billions in property damage, scores of people murdered. And then they show up and they have this protest which breaks a few windows, which probably people that broke the windows were probably federal agents or sent in there to do that.
Of course they were.
And then this is an insurrection, and they have this all these show trials, and you have this kangaroo court in DC, these judges throwing the book at these people. Obviously highly politicized. The jury pool is tainted. And good example with this latest judge with the federal case is Tanya Chutkan, we've talked about, this Jamaican who has prejudicial remarks regarding Donald Trump. She should not be the judge.
It's
Never
just
seen, it's
ridiculous.
obvious.
She shouldn't be a judge. Period. I mean, it's just this, this is
She's actually prosecuted. You've mentioned that she actually has imposed harsher sentences than the government recommended during in some of these January 6 prosecutions. So,
I mean, she's a maniac,
yeah.
and so she's, she's one of these useful idiots that has been spun. Her mind has been created by the Frankfurt School specialists, right, who have got to her and with the literature of victimization and of the history of the evil white male, all of these narratives that have just gotten into her head, and now they are encouraging her to be bold. Be bold. Don't hold back. Just go with your heart. Forget the law. The law is, now is the time. Before we started recording, we were talking about this new trend of complete abandonment of of language. You know, they're encouraging journalism now, and I think actually this will bleed over into the participants in the legal system, like judges and DAs, wherein they will just encourage people to remember when you're writing articles about stuff, like things that happen in reality, that's really not the important part of it. What's the important part is how the story can be woven into the creation of social justice. So this is a real thing. It's actually a, you know, something that's going on in journalism classes, and I think that a flavor of it, you know, is coming in into when you look at, you know, Willis. She it, it the law is being transmogrified into just a part of the social justice as is narrowly defined by, you know, the Frankfurt School operatives that have got control over this person.
Yeah,
So,
what's the crime rate in Atlanta, by the way?
I mean, 100%.
It's like that's just presiding over a crime wave. Same with Alvin Bragg up in New York and these various DAs, but they'd rather go after the high profile political, obvious political, you know, cases. It's
But again,
complete.
it all leads to chaos. And these are the Frankfurt School operatives are absolute specialists in managing chaos. They create it, and then they have the solution for it. And it's always a more concentrated political power, and the individual who is managing it is more and more tightly controlled by their tribe. This is you know, this is what you're fighting against, and which is why I say you're better off if you're going to, you know, actually participate in the federal election world, in being, you know, in going right into a fistfight. And I mean not hitting people, but I'm talking about a legal fistfight, just going at them as hard as you can, and not only going after them as incompetent, going after them as actually behaving in a criminal manner, but calling them out on being evil and controlled. This is a really good time to get old Molly Ball and her crew and all of the, you know, the cultural Marxists who are in back of the universities, and get them to, you know, because they wouldn't be hard. Believe me, you could go into someone like, you know, Willis and Fannie Willis. I have to mention, but you could go into their background, and it wouldn't be difficult to find out who are the influencers with this person. You could find them. What were the books? Who are the people that are still around? Or what is the chain of command that owns her mind? And then once you had it, then you should go after those guys and expose them and say, look, Fanny is a robot, a controlled being who has these influencers above her, and look at how they do it. And you could act. This would be a great time. I think, you know, a lot of the unvaccinated, to use an expression, would relate to that. They would be energized with a political party
Well,
that
I
was that.
think both Mr. Bragg in New York and Ms. Willis in Atlanta are a recipient of George Soros' largesse. They're
What
Soros
is that?
prosecutors.
Gee, do you think if we went up the intellectual chain of command, we'd find good old George
Well, there
somewhere?
should be a RICO case brought against George Soros' foundation, Open Society Foundation, and all
Course.
related NGOs and charitable foundations that are funding these operations. That's how you play hardball. That's what the problem. That's how it should be talked about. That's how it should be discussed. This is the where it's occurring, and again, it's a regime change operation. They've infiltrated. They put their agents in these various government slots, and now they're weaponizing the government. And they're not acting in accordance with law. Maybe they're acting under the color of law because they hold these positions, but they're not acting in good faith, and so this isn't a legal issue, although the indictments come down. We're supposed to think, oh no, an indictment. And then down in Atlanta, they actually issued the indictment before the grand jury reported its bill of indictment. They jumped the gun on
Well,
it,
you
not even
know,
following that process, you know. But the point is, it requires a political solution, which means that you do need like governors and attorneys general stepping in and firing prosecutors, removing them, charging them with abuse of power. You need RICO cases being brought against these billionaires like Soros and his operation. and who all those who work for him being charged because they're involved in promoting rioting and abuse of power. And you know, that's how you do this. That's what Jim Jordan should do. And
Conspiracy.
yeah.
Absolutely. That's why RICO would be so useful because, you know, don't let them hide behind the expression conspiracy theory. Go after Soros and show how he controls all of this money to put morons and puppets in doing that. You could show that, you know, the workers' paradise that Fannie Willis thinks she's bringing about by this kind of bizarre interpretation of the law, right? Is actually a slave camp, is actually a genocidal process for her. She doesn't see it because no one brings up the fact, but it is there. You know, I just wanted to make a digression, which is relevant. I don't know if you caught it, but you know, like feminism has now seen that, gee, there's some this downside to the radical egalitarianism because we've got all these males in our locker room. You know, and like, what happened to that? And I just noticed with, I have to admit, a little arched eyebrow, a little moment of amusement to me, that the powerlifting record was broken last week, Tim, and not by a small margin. It was broken by 440 pounds.
The women's powerlifting
Yeah.
by 400 pounds.
No, 440 pounds, the new
You mean
world record.
the difference?
Because the this giant transgender male got in there and just he established a new record, 440 pounds.
But he's a
So,
male.
of course, I mean, a woman
Okay, but
couldn't
so
lose.
he's a trans woman who broke the
Trans
record. I'm sorry, he broke the record by 400 pounds.
440 pounds. So you can see it was like a.
So the difference between the latest the actual woman power lifter versus this man pretending to be a woman is 440 pounds.
He went up to like 1350, and the most a woman has ever lifted was 900 pounds. So it was just like 50% increase.
Boy, those women are just
Oh yeah, they
wimps.
are. I mean, you see, I mean, I know it's kind of a stretch, but I hope that you and people listen can get what I'm saying is that the workers' paradise of feminism, you know, people now can see that this
Well,
is.
I think they're doing chess too. I think there's a transgendered male, a transgendered female who wants to compete in a women's chess tournament. I didn't know they separated the sexes. I guess they do with chess
Yeah, they
because, you know,
do.
chess is obviously male dominated. I think of the 90% of the top 200 players are male, which you
Oh no, it's more than that.
probably more than that,
I
whatever.
told you,
But
I know
now I guess
it.
they
I
actually
play a
do
lot of
bother to
chess.
separate it, but
I know what I'm talking about here. There are like in the top 200 rated, and in chess you have these very precise ratings. You
yes.
know, it's like so you there's no confusion about strength. And I think Wafang, who like the Chinese, she's not the world champion any longer, but she just has the highest rating. I think she's like 2650. So she would be not in the top 200, I would guess. Yeah, but if she is, just barely.
So,
So
yeah.
this is the point, is that, you know, men and women, we don't just have different pelvises, we have different brains.
Yeah, men and women do think differently.
We
Yes,
have
yes.
different brains. I mean,
It's not
the
a.
corpus callosi, which connects the hemispheres, is different in by the sexes. And
Yeah,
so,
male. If I understand, males are more left-right. It's more
you
distinct,
know,
whereas women are
I've
more
seen a
integrated.
lot
Yeah.
of this stuff, and it's I
Yeah.
don't know. It most of the theories, because there's so much crackpot and malevolence in psychology, I tend not to believe anything that, you know, these
Yeah.
people mention. But I just think men can kind of compartmentalize logic problems a little better, it seems to me, and just in general. That would explain why, you know, you have this enormous disparity in chess performance. But anyway, chess,
Wait, are
just
you
to
sure it isn't societal, just sexism, that telling women they're
right. Yeah, no, I don't
not
think so.
good at chess?
Yeah, sorry. It's hard to, you know, we have to see something like a blind controlled test to demonstrate that, you know, because it's a very far-fetched theory. But no, I think it's just that the brains operate a little differently, and so men have an advantage here. And so a male has decided, because there are money prizes in these tournaments.
Yes, a little
And
cynical, you think? A little
so he
cynical.
shows up. I'm a woman, and I'm here for the $10,000 prize, and he has like 150 rating point advantage over all the other women. But Chess did the
Well,
response.
he just what he did is he did promise if he wins, he'll take the runner up to out to dinner. So,
Yeah, that's right. Of course, he's a
with the
gentleman.
prize money.
Yeah. I mean, so anyway,
Oh, man.
there it is. It's just clown world material. But they did the responsible thing and they banned transgender males. And I hope that other sports will, respond appropriately. And then this will move into an exposure of the agenda, which will help us when we come to people like Fannie Willis, because it's all one agenda. I mean, I don't think Fannie can see it. But believe me, it is. It's just one giant effort to debase culture, human culture, so that the population can be enslaved more easily. That's the truth.
Yep, and to fight back, the right doesn't even have to like break the law. They can just start,
Of course not.
but
They have
they,
to
but
execute the law. I mean,
yeah.
look, I mean, Fannie Willis, what she's doing, are you kidding me? Charging someone who's complaining about something as corrupt as the Georgia. I mean, look, Georgia hasn't had an election that didn't have criminal activity, I mean, since the Revolutionary War. I mean, so the idea that someone would say, well, I want to have more inspection of it because there could be criminal activity, the idea that that would qualify for a RICO charge. This is an abuse of power. There should be a legal response by the Republicans saying, "Nah, we don't we think you're either crazy or manipulated, and we're going to arrest you."
Well,
And
unless you
then,
did something like the Congress cut off funding for Clark's, a federal indictment of Trump,
yeah, of course. And
and so
there
there's ways
actually
and.
Colton Moore, who's the Georgia State Republican who actually did the right thing, he's talking about defunding her.
Yeah, that's
He's
what
saying
you do.
that office should be defunded. That shouldn't have a single penny. She shouldn't be getting a salary if she's going to behave like this.
Yeah, so on a similar vein, basically this is kind of goes under the I guess the banner of weaponize or sorry well weaponizing government, also criminalizing and banning your political opposition. In Germany, you saw a thing where in Germany they have this it's a right wing, they call it a right wing, far right wing, but it's alternative for Germany. The AfD, Germany, I guess it's Deutschland, it's alternative for Germany. As the
It's anti, well, it doesn't want to be overrun by immigrants, and it doesn't like the forced pronoun business.
Okay, so there must be so they're Nazis.
There must be Nazis, right? They're like building concentration camps in their backyard,
Well, apparently they're getting too popular, which according to I guess the it's this guy Thomas Haldenwang, he's a domestic spy chief, head of the German domestic intelligence branch, which you can trust. They're getting too popular, so in order to protect democracy, they need to be banned.
Right. That's how we protect democracy, isn't it? Yeah.
It might be if they weren't letting the country get overrun by foreigners, by people from Africa, and letting women getting raped and crime skyrocketing, and also letting Germany get industrialized. By NATO, which these people don't like, with all the Ukraine business and the destruction of the pipeline that occurred last year. Maybe if Germany actually represented the interest and will of the German people, this party may not be so popular, or at least wouldn't see its popularity rising, because there's a lot of discontent in Germany because of these policies. But the response isn't to say, oh, maybe we have bad policies. We should actually look after the interest of the people who elect us, who presumably we serve, instead of serving NATO or Israel or CIA, whoever,
All of
or
the above.
the Davos crowd, whatever. Maybe if they didn't do that, you wouldn't have this party surging. But their response is just to ban the party, call them bad names, and call it a. And that's how Germans protect their democracy, is by
Well,
banning
remember,
political opposition.
yeah, and they brought out the Hitler. He's
Well, which
very
is
Hitler-like.
ironic, because isn't that what the Nazis did? National Socialists, they banned other parties. That's what they did.
Course, right? I know. You
So
see,
wait a second. I mean,
again, but the I mean, what he did was, because they actually brought it out, it was pretty, I thought it was kind of, amusing may not be the right word, but so they, the pronoun people had a triangle that had the gay flag on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in his, like, as a little way of representing his opinion, he turned it upside down, right? So it, and which they said is very reminiscent of the triangle that Nazi forced gay men to wear when they were in concentration. I swear. I mean, this literally. So, I mean, imagine, like,
so they're playing the Holocaust card again.
Yeah, they can't, I mean, it just, it came, they couldn't go like two steps without playing the Holocaust card. So, you know, it's not, you know, it's the people who control Germany are not Germans, have nothing but contempt for the German people. They're sort of like our political class.
Yeah.
And what's going on in the Ukrainian war with all of the wasted money that's going into that hellhole, hopefully that's helping, even though it's impoverishing Germany terribly. Hopefully that'll just, you know, make, you know, parties like, or perhaps the AfD itself just become, you know, majority, because.
but then we really have to ban it
that's
to protect
right.
democracy.
Yeah.
Before most Germans support the party, we have to ban the party to protect democracy.
Right. Yeah. We have to work quick here, because otherwise democracy would be ruined.
Well, I believe this party comes out of the East, Thuringia, I think, which is the, if I have my geography correct, which is the, now that's the, kind of the more conservative part of Germany, ironically, because that was the area controlled by the communists, and they weren't affected by all the toxic Western culture that West Germany was subjected to since 1945. And because Germans, I mean, you got this whole, you know, obviously the blood libel that's been imposed upon them via the Holocaust narrative. But then you have all the psychological warfare, the, you know, toxic Western culture, sexualization of German culture that occurred in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, which demoralized and probably set Germany up for this today, where they lack ethnic identity, morale, a sense of morality and decency, and these things to fend a lot of these bad ideas off. And so now they're just ripe, you know, they're ripe to be exploited and destroyed. But yeah, like I said, human nature being what it is, people can only take so much. And now this party, this return for Germany party, is rising in the polls, and the response of the state is to ban it. I mean, it's just outrageous what we're seeing in our country.
Yeah. And again, this is diminishing returns. This will just lead to the party accelerating its popularity. And the Frankfurt School specialists that run Germany will not permit any discussion on anything, because they can't discuss a single issue. When they do, it just becomes so self-evident that they are lying and that there is a hidden agenda, which is genocidal, that they just can't talk about things.
Well, the law in Germany apparently is if it's a proven right-wing extremist party, it can be banned. But there's that language issue you were talking about. What is, hey, what's right wing? What's extremist? Is it extreme to oppose your country's deindustrialization and impoverishment and miseration? Is it extreme to oppose your country being overrun by illegal immigrants? Is it extreme to oppose your women getting raped by these immigrants? Is it extreme
to want to talk about these things in public?
It's extreme to use a proper pronoun.
Is that an extreme? Because this is what they're saying.
It's extreme, huh?
Yeah, there was an example this week of why they can't talk about anything. You know, Mark Cuban, who made a lot of his money in pharmaceuticals, tried to defend the vaccine against some skeptical Indian doctor, mm-hmm. and it got public. It was in tweets, and Cuban just got slaughtered. I mean, it was like, you know, just demolished. He didn't know what he was talking about. He was trying to promote the vaccines and defend the vaccines and didn't have any facts right. Anyway, after like five or six written exchanges, the guy said, you know, let's continue with this. There's all these other issues. And Cuban said, no, I can tell that you only talk to conservative people. And he broke off the debate. So I thought that was really par excellence, an example of look, they can't talk about anything. And so the Georgian state senator who's going against her, he should be demanding, you know, that look, let's have some real public discussion about what is legitimate protest over the election process. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this. What actually was said? In other words, you get out the facts that Willis has woven into her indictment and get them into the public's mind and discussion with someone who knows the law, who can defend Trump, you know, and Willis will be exposed. This is what we need to do with these events. I mean, they're using him to destroy us, right? I mean, they're literally trying to wreck our self-esteem. They're setting Trump up as, you know, a racist, and you know, he's just a figurehead.
Well, did you see that video? Someone ran a string of all the Democrats, liberals in 2018, 2019, accusing the Republicans of potentially weaponizing the Department
of
Justice.
It goes on for half an hour.
You're like, wait a second. It's like, I mean, either they're completely have no self-awareness or they simply don't care. They can get away with it. The left knows they can get away with this because there's no accountability.
Yeah,
for
no
their
media
actions.
And
yeah, there's nothing the media is going to talk about this. The same thing with election fraud. We just there's endless videos in 2016, 2000, basically 2017, but talking about how Hillary Clinton claiming that she ran a perfect campaign, the election was stolen from her. Jimmy
right.
Carter claiming that the Russians took the election, hacked the election. What do you mean by hacking the election? Well, we're not going to get specifics on it. What do you mean hack the election? There's no evidence of that. And it turns out that was a false accusation anyway, dreamt up by the Hillary campaign to cover up. Then it turns out that all this Ukraine stuff and the initial impeachment for Trump, remember, he was impeached twice, even as he was leaving office, was really funny. But over the Ukraine, looking into the corruption of the Biden family, which is now being exposed. And like, shouldn't he look into that? I mean, you're a vice president, obviously.
Well, just think of this, Tim, just think of what you said logically. I mean, you have Russiagate.
Yeah.
And this is being presented as real. You have the whole Hunter Biden Ukrainian pay for play scandal, which is then being said, well, this is not real. Both of those turn out to be completely inverted, right? That the position that the Democrats had now they're absolutely mechanically exposed as incorrect. And now we go into this third phase where you have the indictment for RICO. You know, corruptions. And I mean, okay, this is just, you know, the Republicans should not take these things seriously. You know, they're not serious. They're not real legal, you know,
no
things. They're just kind of sophistry, and they're just trying to attack basically European culture, but they need to use it as an opportunity. And I really was happy. I was kind of surprised that by this Colton Moore guy. I thought that was great. I thought, you know, right. He could have been a wimp and, you know, said, we'll have to, you know, I hope, you know, been real polite and self-esteem orienting toward Fannie Willis, you know, and stuff. But instead he came right at her and said, nah, this is a witch hunt. You're weaponizing our justice system. We need to defund your office. This is great. That's what the public needs to do. And now he needs to go public. He needs to be more verbal and expose what Willis actually did, you know, in other words, how she mangled reality in order to create these charges. And he needs to expose who's controlling her. I'd love to see that. And I mean, I'd love to see George Soros. He should just, if I was him, I'd go tomorrow morning, I'd go, George Soros owns Fannie Willis's mind, and I can prove it, you know, and we're going to have a whole series of public discussions about it, because we've got to root this evil out of our electoral system if we're going to have any real democracy.
Well, I mean, obviously, a position of prosecutor, district attorney is too important of a position to let it be controlled by people of her caliber. And the abuse of power, the potential abuse of power is immense. You simply ruin people's lives with indictments. And you can, with the power of indictment, power investigation, it's very easy to disrupt and also to criminalize your political opposition, which is in this situation is obvious. Again, none of this is an endorsement of Donald Trump nor his politics. You would think they could, people, there'd be bigger brains in the Democratic Party to say, wait a second, there's a bigger issue here. Let's roll this back. We're going a little too far here. But apparently, they're, you know, again, they either it's Trump derangement syndrome or they just want to break the system. And it's a way to break the system by denying it all legitimacy. At least even window dressing at this point. It's just ripping it all off for all to see. Just naked tyranny.
The cultural Marxist social engineers select these people for docility and basically lack of intelligence so that they will just do what, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's pretty obvious when you look at their behavior.
I mean, it goes all the way to the top with President Biden and Kamala Harris.
Of course. I mean, absolutely.
No. It's like,
you know, there are some, you know, smart, evil people inside the Democratic Party, but there's just a lot of, you know, and of course, it's also true on the Republican. I mean, Mitch McConnell, where does he come from? You know, I mean, it's obviously, you know, a Masonic control there, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the fact that he's borderline senile and
helps. Or Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a real person. I mean, these positions he's taking are, you know, supporting, you know, the kind of passion for saving democracy in Ukraine. When the country is a slave state, when democracy has been suspended, right? When the, you know, they're now talking about over 500,000 dead. I mean, I was reading this report. They're saying there's over, because I've read before there's somewhere between 10 and 50,000. I was reading this one guy saying now there's over 50,000 one-legged Ukrainians. That they've lost their because the Russian landmines are designed to take out a limb. And, you know, I I'm just so worried because, and this is like Lindsey Graham, you know, the zealotry, they will find a way to put these people back into the front. I betcha, because before they're done with this thing, they're just going to grind the population.
Well, they still have another leg to lose. So there you go.
Yeah, right. They have a leg up. But, yeah. You know, I was thinking about that. And I was thinking, you know, in the U.S., we have the 101, which is in Poland, incidentally. They could have a division called the 1-1.
Yeah.
Which would be all one-legged, you know, Ukrainians hobbling back to the front. I mean, but anyway, my point is that, you know, Fanny is not real. She, God bless her. She did not come to her, you know, understanding the law through sitting there and like, you know, cogitating, you know, solemnly over law books and going, oh my God, I see a criminal pattern here. You know, no, she was just told what to do. Lindsey Graham, you know, he's an actor. This isn't real stuff. He doesn't really believe that, you know, we have to, you know, give another $25 billion to the Ukraine to protect democracy. Of course, he's not a moron. He's just an actor, just reading lines, you know. So, you know, for the public, I mean, you know, our work's cut out for us. But one thing for sure is we have to, when we have an opportunity like this, when there's something this egregious, you can't just be polite, you know, and well, we'll let the legal process go for it. You know, for heaven's sakes.
Well, this isn't the legal process. Legal process, it's an abuse of the legal process. It's criminal. It's lawfare, and it's also criminalized lawfare. I mean, the fact that they let lawfare for civil cases go so long as it has is bad enough.
Yeah.
You abuse the legal system to go after opponents by bankrupting them. You know, then now you're doing the same thing with criminal law in this case. So that's where we are. And again, you have to fight it politically. It's not a legal issue anymore. You know, did you see that? Might be a function of this. The article sent you by Harold Robertson. It was complex systems won't survive the competence crisis.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to read it?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I agree. I mean,
did you like you to know, how he skirted so how he skirted see, around I, the I, issue?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, well, you know, the idea of government is complicated. Think about the U.S. what it is, and then we're not going to be a meritocracy. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It just we have to be, and if that is not the strongest, you know, element in the whole process, then we're doomed. And this came up in Hawaii. You know, we saw that where The, you know, obviously there is some real, I think, high level malevolence, some cultural Marxist engineering going on there. I don't know about directed weapons or who knows, but I know that they want, and this is in record, they want Lahaina to be one of these 15-minute cities, you know, where
That's,
they,
yeah, some people are suggesting that, yeah.
the whole island, they really want to turn into that. Well, anyway, it's, you know, you, anyway, you have like a kind of a Soros Democratic Party. It's a single party state. And you've ended up with these kind of, you know, sweet Hawaiian affirmative action, you know, characters who are running local and state positions. And then during the fire, where you probably had, I'm going to guess, over 2,000 people burned to death, you had the head of the state water system not release the water. Right. There was an issue that there wasn't water in the mains. I mean, no one could actually battle the fire. This is what I have read. And then this individual was criticized, and videos came about where he was talking about his management of water as relating to Hawaiian religious practice. Now, this is an interesting idea, but you know, sometimes you just got to wash the dishes. You know what I mean?
It's like,
And so this
yes.
is, but this is what you get, you know, when, and then they had like the relief is just absolutely scandalous, that no one is giving anything to the people who need things. It's all being done by locals. They realize the government is just useless. I saw this one really angry person with the mayor of Lahaina, who was one of these sweet Hawaiian guys, who was, certainly was there because of, you know, self-esteem issues, and you know, by the electorate, you know, and I mean, but he wasn't competent. He didn't have answers. He couldn't help these people. And you see, the meritocracy is needed when you have any kind of you know, of like complicated or dangerous event. And that's when, you know, when, I mean, think about it, Tim. Think about if there was, I mean, God forbid, a crime wave in Atlanta. What, would you really want Fannie Willis to be in charge of the DA's office, you know?
No. Yeah, you're saying basically it's just, it is societal collapse or collapse of our complex systems, the price we pay for diversity.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
evidently it is, because the diversity agenda, you simply can't supply the bodies, enough people of the right color, if you will, you know, from a protected class or oppressed class, if you will, to fill these positions. And so they start discriminating against those who are competent, which tend to be white people, particularly white men, straight white men. And so what you do is you have these systems start to break down, and you have like this guy in Hawaii who is the right ethnicity. He's an ethnic Hawaiian, so he's indigenous, that's all that matters. And he's talking about holistic understanding of water and how this, how we approach it, how water isn't simply a resource to be used. Well, in a fire, it better damn well be.
Yeah.
It's,
Now you're
it is,
talking
it
about
is a re
protein.
hey, it is, this is a guy, he's a head of resource management, and he's not calling water a resource. Well, what is it then?
He was talking about, I mean,
Right.
the videos that I saw of him were surrealistic. And I think they were taken before the event. He was just describing, you know, what
Yeah.
he is. Now, after the fact, you can see how needed you know, meritocracy was in this instance. I mean, he was talking about water as not only a religious, like, aspect of Hawaiian culture, and we needed to start thinking of it in a terms,
It's
basically,
divine. Water itself is divine.
divine, of a divine term, in divine terms.
You need to revere it. Like a,
But
he's
then
like,
in
it's like
terms, okay,
animism or
well,
something.
once we have like made it, we've deified it, then we have to use it for social justice, water. So, I mean, how is someone like that mind created? I mean,
Well,
what
having
force?
access to like potable water, clean drinking water, it's an
Yeah.
engineering issue, it's a technological issue. Water. These things don't occur naturally. This is a product of Western, dare I say, white culture. You know? And putting these people who have no regard for this technology or background, and then are indoctrinated to think that the culture that produces the things are evil, therefore you don't have to bother learning about engineering or mathematics or logic or showing to work on time. Yeah, as we know from the plaque at the African American Museum, these are attributes of white supremacy. Well, there's consequences for this, and our complex systems can't be maintained if we don't bring in the people who have the experience and the knowledge to maintain them, and that requires a certain amount of technological skill and also intelligence. But if
never forget Bateson. I mean, remember, you know, when they asked him how to design a more effective slave state, right? He was an anthropologist in Indochina. That's what it's called then.
Well, the promote primitivism.
And he said promoting primitivism. He said give them, and what it was, the technique was to give them self-esteem. In other words, you give them high praise and high levels of self-esteem for the most primitive parts of their culture. That way they're easier to control, and they don't feel bad about or even care about the high technical weapons and control systems of the slave owner class. So when, you know, and Bateson, of course, was at the, you know, the cybernetics conference in the Macy's, where they set up MK Ultra and the counterculture and all of that. But you can see it actually then went on into the self-esteem movement, right? Because it's really just, that's really just a kind of a Bateson application, you know, where when, and you could see it so much in the interviews with the Hawaiian political class that, you know, like the water management guy. I mean, he had tremendous self-esteem. You could see how proud he was of himself, and he was embracing the most primitive part of the Hawaiian religious culture. And that was something we should all give him a raise for, right? Because he's just so wonderful because he has this, and that works fine in a dream world, but in a real world, it just leads you to where they are now, which is they're going to head to a 15-minute island, and we'll see how much he likes that.
Well, I guess you could say Alvin Bragg, New York, and Fannie Willis in Atlanta, Georgia, think very highly of themselves too, and they've been told to think very highly of themselves. But in this article, complex systems won't survive the competence crisis. Mr. Robertson writes, the core issue is that changing political mores have established the systematic promotion of the unqualified and the sidelining of the competent. This has continually weakened our society's ability to manage modern systems. He cites about law schools no longer requiring the law school admission tests, MCATs in medical schools. The colleges are now doing away with this collected aptitude test. This was something they were instituted in the 20th century America to tap the talent that was outside, you know, Harvard and Yale and these things, because they didn't have enough people to staff the empire, if you will. So they needed to be able to exploit that talent throughout the country, but it maintained high standards. Of course, there was a demographic reality of this. Most of the people that qualified then were ethnic whites, and then in the latter part of the 20th century, you had a lot more Asians, but then not the protected preferred groups like Blacks and Hispanics, or people of color, if you will. And he writes, by the 1960s, the systemic selection of competence came into direct conflict with the political imperatives of the civil rights movement. He cites the Civil Rights Act and such things like legal doctrines as disparate impact. Disparate impact. Disparate impact was an admission. Was an admission that these protected groups simply could not meet this objective standards that were race neutral. So the reaction was to do away with the standards. Well, what's the consequences of that? Now, at the time, the demographics were such that you really didn't really feel it yet. These incompetent, you know, AA hires could be absorbed into corporations and the government and not really feel it now. Well, that's changing now. We're seeing this like in Hawaii and this stuff, and you saw with the late, you know, with the radicalization agitation the civil rights agenda, particularly with the 1619 Project, Black Power movement, and Black Lives Matter, and the demonization of all things white, not all things white, even the culture that made our society possible with the technology and the infrastructure, and also the legal system that people like Fannie Willis and Alvin Bragg don't care much for, and this abuse, things seem to be collapsing. And what we have now, we have to sacrifice meritocracy, quality, competence, and efficiency on the altar of diversity. And we're seeing that now. And a lot of this is based on, I guess it was justified on sort of a religious belief in equality, meaning that all groups are going to be the same, performances are going to be the same. There aren't any group differences. People are all the same. And any disparity, any difference had to be because of racism, i.e. evil white man, right? Evil white man. Well, you know, and that's even, you know. So
ask the woman weightlifter that lost the competition.
Yes.
To see how that's working out for her. I mean, 440 pounds, baby, you're going to have to hit the barbells pretty good next week. You know, to get competitive, you know? Yeah. So the whole thing is ridiculous. The whole self-esteem idea was just critical theory. I mean, that's really what it was. I mean, it wasn't like they had some kind of objective criteria which they could say, look, if we get rid of this many white guys and put this many black and women in, then we'll have this kind of war. Of course not. They didn't have any kind of criteria at all. It was just, it was really a way of weakening and damaging society from the very beginning. It's always been the case. This goes right to the Great Society. Right. When they got that social program into the black culture, all of the demographics that are important did a U-turn, every single one, and never came back. And if anyone had like, well, we really care about the black people and the black culture, and gee, we really think that, you know, we got to stop this because we're hurting it, they would have stopped them. They don't care. They were succeeding in what they wanted to do. Fannie Willis is an achievement of the critical Marxists. She is an achievement. This is what they wanted. And they are not doing this to make a better world for Fannie Willis.
Well, it's almost like the equivalent of like an Africa decolonization. Under the guise of decolonization, you had black independence. But what was installed were these corrupt black officials who were very easily instrumentalized, exploited by foreign capital, you know. Yeah. And the same thing with these cities, where these black officials, whether it's Atlanta or Chicago. And you hear about Chicago. Brandon Johnson wants to in order for Chicago to continue being a sanctuary city, he wants to export some of the illegal immigrants or migrants, if you will, into the white suburbs. That's
there
the only
go.
Way it can continue being.
Sure,
a sanctuary.
Be just open, welcome, you know, illegal immigrants. Yeah.
So it's like, but it, like this article goes, the U.S. has embraced a novel question: what happens when men who built the complex systems our society relies on cease contributing and are replaced by people who are chosen for reasons other than competency, i.e. race, right? Race. The system collapses. And that's what we're seeing.
Eventually it just completely collapses. It disintegrates in the very moment you get rid of the meritocracy.
The reality, this is the ugly reality. It goes to like the egalitarianism, this ideology of equality, which there's no basis in reality for. It's a religious belief, meaning that that across the board, all people are equal. No, with freedom, you're going to get inequality. It's a question: what's the cause of the inequality? That's the issue. But the point is, absent a step. Yes, I closed the article, Mr. Roberts, Harold Roberts, said he goes, absent a step change in the quality of American governance and a renewed culture of excellence, they prefigure the country's future, meaning that you got to reverse all this stuff, and you got basically a reposition of what they call white supremacy, right? Which is basically the legal system, the economic system, the infrastructure, the standards, which they deem to be white supremacy, because
I'm sorry, but when I read the article, I was thinking, you know, this guy means well, but he's such a wimp. You need to have that, you know, where he uses an expression, you need to have that automatic translator in your mind, you know, to go, oh, he's talking about like black women here, you know, or, you know, yes. What I mean? He won't. And this was kind of sad, because, you know, he wants to talk about the truth, but his language just reflects the fact that his mind is impotent, that it doesn't have any real self-confidence to honestly express itself.
Well, what we
He has
yeah.
euphemisms for, you know, for all of the real facts that he's talking about.
You can argue, like I said, there's a, we can argue about why the things are the way they are, but we have to acknowledge what reality is and how to deal with it. So if you know, or, you know, the idea, which how, you can argue how things should be, but how are things actually are, and how do we deal with that? And what we're seeing now with this cult of diversity, this is done just to sort of to dispossess the ethnic white majority of the United States, to destroy the United States as it was, whatever it was. That's what
not
it is.
And, about workers' paradise, guys. It's
yeah,
to
it's
destroy,
to destroy it. And we see that in the cities, the various cities. And it's just the one thing that we see, and it's almost like an iron law, is that when you install these blacks to control cities, the white people suffer and they have to leave. That's just what we're seeing. It's the same everywhere you see, whether it's post-colonial Africa or American cities, it's the effects the same. It's everywhere you see. It's whether it's Zimbabwe, whether
both
it's St.
Both
Louis,
cultures.
Some Alabama, cultures. Detroit, Baltimore.
Yeah. Right.
So what do you, so that's the reality. What do you do with it? The problem is the power, what we have now, what we're seeing now, isn't a process of self-government or public choice or people voluntarily making decisions. It's almost like a function of the power of the administrative state now, with the civil rights laws, the bureaucracy. And the White House even said last year that it was going to, you know, promote diversity by discriminating against whites and promoting people of color throughout the various bureaucracies. And so, but nowhere is is competence or expertise or quality the focus. It's all diversity. And the problem is, at the same time, you've had these same groups, whether they Hispanic or blacks, even Asians, that try to like agitate. That's a harder thing to do, though, because Asians are considered sort of like approximate or adjacent to whites because they're a high level of you know, of achievement, even with the South Asians, you know, like Indians and all that. But they've agitated, they mobilized, divide and conquer. And so these groups don't feel they even have to excel or perform well, because damn it, we're oppressed, or we have it coming to us, or we're so smart, you know, or, you know, learning math and learning these things or showing the work on time is acting white. We don't have to do this. The problem is, if these people start to dominate the various bureaucracies and corporations, the system is going to collapse because they can't do the work that makes the system function.
You know, and look, the characters we see, they're like Leslie Graham. I mean, they're artificial. Fannie Willis does not represent like the black intellectuals. I talk to black intellectuals all the time, and I can tell you, they're millions, well, certainly hundreds of thousands of high functioning black business and legal minds that are literally heads and shoulders above Fannie Willis. So how did she get this?
Well, Shirley, yeah, they're not in the political class or the governing
you see,
class.
There,
or the shape
you see, my
class,
point
yeah.
is that the actual kind of racial razor that's being cut across is nonsensical. It's meritocracy razor. They don't want a smart black person in there. That person could go, wait a second, I don't like this stuff against Trump. It makes no sense legally.
That's,
and he,
yeah.
he would fight back. But Fannie is not going to do that.
But
see?
My point is, even given the diversity goals and the demographics and the number of people, the talent pool, if you will, is far too shallow to fill the current position necessary to keep the system running. But they'd rather have the system collapse first. Then address that reality, meaning that, of course, there are a select few, a minority of that minority, who function very well and do very well. But there simply aren't enough to meet the quotas or the objectives.
Well,
and I think over above all this, there is an ethnic, again, this isn't misguided altruism or ideology. There, I think, also above in this, and we've talked about the group that's doing this, basically people like Fannie Willis, Ivor Bragg, these are Jewish golems.
Yeah.
And they are being utilized to destroy the system. To add, you know, that's why that's why they support things like mass overwhelming immigration to diversify. That's why they support diversity, because they want to create a Babel where there is no cohesive or coherent majority, ethnic majority, that has agency to challenge their elite rule. And that's a it's a governing strategy. What we're seeing is a governing strategy through intentional misgovernance. It's chaos. It's
100%.
anarcho-tyranny.
100%.
No,
absolutely.
And that's where when this guy Roberts writes this article, he's looking, he's saying, wait, this is just bad policy, it's stupidity, we have to reverse this. The only problem is there is the political force that's going to prevent you from trying to reverse this because they have an agenda.
He's idiotic, I hate to say this, because he doesn't recognize the deliberate agenda here. He actually thinks, I believe, if you take him at face value, that you know, these are just bad decisions, and that, you know, there it's a stupidity.
Well, if society collapses because of the civil rights movement, then or the civil rights laws, you repeal the damn civil rights laws. Isn't worth the price.
But remember, it's collapsing because that's the plan. I mean, when you have like in San Francisco, you know, or other cities where you have hordes of the children of the Great Society programs in the street midday, jumping on automobiles, right? The police have been, you know, and they've been told to incarcerate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think the future of that culture is, right? They've been given all the self-esteem, they've been given all the political power, they are not being persecuted, but they don't have any momentum or inspiration to move away from just literally the gutter, which is where they are now. The problem that the guy was talking about is that, you know, when you have a really complicated system like the US, you need a large, large fraction of the population that can handle these technical issues, mm-hmm. right? Political, business, finance. I mean, what they're trying to do, it reminds me of when they decided that they needed 10% of the students at MIT to be black.
Yes.
Well, okay, that's great. How do you think they're going to perform at MIT?
How do you maintain MIT standards to meet that quota? You can't. So you lower the standards.
Yeah, it's one or the other. These were really smart black people who had great education, who did well. They weren't even in the bottom, like, 5% of the students at MIT. They were literally a separate bell curve. And so
but you can't social engineer equality.
Well, you see, there you go.
My point is that that's a value judgment in of itself, because technical expertise, these things, yeah, they're great, they have a great utility, but it doesn't necessarily mean that not everyone can be a rocket scientist, nor should they. Someone's going to have to be a construction worker, garbage man, mid-level, all that sort of stuff. So, and this, a lot of the stuff is going to break down along ethnic and racial lines, given the differences. A lot of the stuff we simply don't know, but you can't overnight make a great leap forward, which the civil rights movement tried to do. That's why you had affirmative action. Immediately after civil rights, let's ban discrimination. Wait, let's have affirmative action. Let's discriminate because we have these differences. Because the assumption was the differences were a function of barriers and Jim Crow and segregation. Instead of, wait a second, maybe some of the reasons why it's segregation, Jim Crow, because people observe differences. You know, so my point is the narrative matters a lot here. Meaning, what we have to go back to. Wait a second. How do we navigate these differences? You certainly don't deal with it properly by ignoring that they exist. And now with the racial narrative of civil rights, basically blacks are noble victims, whites are evil oppressors. That narrative, well, you can't maintain the standards anymore. Especially if the demographics change, which they've been. Demographics have been purposely changed through mass immigration, non-white, non-ethnic white immigration into the country. That was the whole purpose of the 65 immigration law, we now know. You know, to produce the very chaos that we're seeing today.
That's my point right there. Okay. Is that if this was just stupidity, well, we could probably fix it. You know, because we could reason with people. Let's go back to a little more meritocracy. You know. Kind of societal.
No, it's not stupidity. When you point this out, and then Chuckie Schumer accuses you of being racist and being a Nazi, he's not being stupid. He's being malicious.
Of course. He knows perfectly well that you're telling the truth.
Yeah.
Just like the poor guy who wrote the article knew perfectly well what the truth is, but he couldn't. You know, he had to use fake language in order to not, you know,
like, or not to be ruined.
And,
not to be
Chuckie
lynched.
Schumer, right. Yeah. And Chuckie Schumer can sit there and, like, you know, use all this kind of like a sophistry against, you know, a white guy who's saying, you know, gee, society would work better if we didn't have like young black males in the streets with, you know, carjacking all the time. I mean, he can, you know, roll out the race card, and he's backed up by the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN and even Fox News. I mean, they're all swept up as this big propaganda structure. But the thing we have to always remember is that what we're seeing is not stupidity. It's a plan that is designed to take us into oblivion. And so that's why it's so dangerous, because what we're seeing, you know, people, they think they're being rhetorical, and they say, well, this is the end of America. Tim, I mean, this is the end of America. They really do want to actually end the country.
Yeah.
And then most of the population in it. This is a gigantic genocidal project. That's what we're all living in.
Well, it was telling. It was last year when Charles Schumer, the senator from Tel Aviv, New York, rather. He is a Shomer, a soldier for Israel. He's very proud of that. He's a U.S. senator, who, by the way, who warned Trump in his first year of presidency to be very careful, because the intelligence agencies have six ways to Sunday go after you. He says, really? Is that how our system works, Senator? And no one called him out on that. And apparently they were at work going after him. But anyway, he says, when he was talking about immigration, that we need more immigration from around the world, third immigration, because the U.S. population simply isn't reproducing itself anymore. Look how low the birth rates are. Well, why are the birth rates low? Well, the birth rates are low because your co-ethnics did a good job the past 30, 40 years using Hollywood and advertising and governmental policies and infiltrating universities to promote things like homosexuality, sexual degeneracy in the name of civil rights, feminism, loading on the debt, so it's and with inflation, so it's impossible for a single paycheck to support a family, while at the same time delegitimizing masculinity and the patriarchal father, because we all know, because as the American Jewish Committee said in Authoritarian Personality, the nuclear family with the patriarchal father as authority figure is the seedbed for fascism that has to be destroyed.
Exactly.
Through Eros. Yeah. And Eros ultimately produces sterility, and that's what you get. So you have low birth rates. Same thing's happening in Germany, where they've been when you over-sexualize and promote degenerate culture, you get low birth rates because you don't have family formation, you don't have community.
Well,
and then he comes out, the solution is, let's just flood the country with non-Americans. Well, it's not America anymore.
In England, they released, the live birth statistics, and they're down dramatically. No one talks about the vaccine, but they are. It's continuing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pointed out that, you know, a third of all the births were to non-UK-born women. The highest proportion of these were from India as the country of birth, right? So you can see that it's a genocide. And it's heading into, kind of an ungovernable, or at least by democratic standards, clump. They had this woman, Professor Sarah Harper, saying that this is terrific. She was going that, you know, these people really, you don't want them to have kids because it's good for the planet, since they're, they use a lot of energy and food, these high producers. And of course, she is, well established in the World Economic Forum and funded by George Soros, Sarah Harper. So, and then I would just, conclude that thought with pointing out that, well, what is the intent here? You know what, really, what they're going to do with England? It's going to be Calcutta, like when it was part of the Raj, mm-hmm. and the British Freemason lodges ran the place like a slave camp. I mean, that's where, this is all headed,
Well, there was, I think it was Tony Blair's government that said they were going to rub the English working class, rub their noses in diversity. And by that, they meant this third world. And it's funny, if you walk to England, the immigration, so there's the Windrush story, when that boat came in from the West Indies full of blacks. At the time, people were very unhappy with it. You look at the debates at the time, and now it's sort of memorialized as a great thing, but people up until the 70s, 80s, weren't happy with it at all, because even both parties recognized the problems. But the problem is the Labor Party then became neoliberal, and the Conservative Party then supports, cheap labor. So basically, the working class was left without anything in England. Similar to the United States with the 65, Hart-Celler Act, where it was the whole idea was to rub everyone's face, rub their noses, and ever increasing year in, year out, more diversity. And then at the time, flip the narrative and say diversity is our strength. Somehow we're a nation of immigrants and these and that whole myth. Basically, the nation was started by pioneers, not immigrants. It's not as if the people came to America and then immediately signed up on the indigenous Americans, the American Indians, SNAP programs and welfare programs and inundated these things. It's a completely different, different situation. So again, they flip the narrative on us, and then when you call it out, they call you a racist. You make you feel guilty for pointing out that your country's been stolen from you.
Right, exactly, and it's ridiculous, and and they're not trying. We have to get the people who are the beneficiaries, or at least we should try. I mean, someone should mention this to Fanny, that they are telling you that you're going into this brave new world, but believe me, if you just look at the statistical trajectories and look at go out into your world. Get out of the bourgeois middle class setup that they have you assembled in and go out into the inner cities where all of these programs now can be understood in terms of their achievements. And then you can see the future. The future is the fentanyl brigade. And so incidentally, I just pulled up the data on women chess players. The top 100 are all males, and the ratings go from like 28-45 from Magnus Carlsen, the goat of historical chess, all the way down to 100 is at 26-42. They're all males, and the highest rated woman is would be 26-20, so she might be 150. So just for comparison, so there you go. There are differences, and you can't overcome them in terms of their function just with self-esteem programs. You need to have something in place that actually can produce competency. And it's kind of too late for these discussions. I think now really we have to focus on exposing the malevolence in back of the great society programs, and the open society programs. We have to just start getting people to be aware that, this is deliberate malevolence genocide.
Yep. Well, if we can have transgendered female chess feeders, right? We can have transgendered women chess champions.
We certainly can. Why not?
And it doesn't, it's like, okay,
But
why not?
say something. Say if you are a chess playing female, do you think you'll get stronger if you go through hormone therapy? I
That's
don't
right. If
think
you give them cross-sex hormone treatment, we'll
so.
make
Are you going
women.
to end up with like these trans men ending, or what, how would you call them? Trans, I mean, I don't even know what pronouns you would use. But they will not end up, these individuals will not end up in the top 100 of the biological males. No matter what you do, it isn't going to change. I'm sorry.
Who are the top 100 checkers players?
I
How
don't
does
know.
that break down?
But I'm sure it's the same thing. I know it. Look, I mean, I used to play a lot of backgammon, and it was, looking at luck and skill. And it was the same thing. The top players were all,
Really? How about bridge?
bridges. The top players are men.
Interesting.
Bridge is very mathematical. Do you play it?
No, I've never been had the patience, nor do I
Oh,
think of the intelligence.
just don't start. You're a waste of a great mind. Bridge
It's
is
like,
just
I know that it was
absolutely.
a back in the day, it was a big couples thing, wasn't it?
Sure. And
Like in the
women
50s
love
and 60s, a more
it. And
civilized
women
era.
do all the time,
I thought
but
women did very, but women also very good at, well, I guess not, I mean, obviously some women are, like code breakers and that sort of, but that's a few, that's the minority. It's like,
I that's kind of,
Like,
mythologic. I think that
was
in
it
some,
Hedy Lamarr? Didn't she? Wasn't she an
yeah, she, well, she
actress?
wasn't a code breaker. She came up with some kind of like
Submarine thing,
radar.
right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
but
But
there are
that's
really,
not they're outliers, right? So I
believe
think,
me,
yeah.
there are really, as we know, really incredibly brilliant women. However, in this little world of that kind of, narrowly focused analytic capacity, I would just say, there is more likely a biological explanation for the fact that the top 100 chess players are males than a sociologic, right? I mean,
Oh
that would just be my honest take. I mean, could be wrong here, but I also know that there is a real difference between the brains.
yeah. They're,
Oh, you see?
I understand they're better at crossword puzzles, women.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
it's like there's some games like if I play with my wife, I have no chance at all. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like her, like there was a game once, a trivial game about geography, and she just knew everything. I go, oh, what do you? How do you know these things? And she didn't even know how she knew them. But her mind somehow had that with words and things. She just got it. But she hates chess. She would never. She would just wait. Just not for her.
How about
So.
I think games like Scrabble women do very well at from
I'm sure they would, of
yeah.
course. I mean, when I was in elementary school, the smartest people in the classroom were the girls. They're the ones that did better in everything. Men were, I think the boys were going to catch up eventually, but,
Well, that's what
so.
does happen. Yeah, elementary, that does happen. Like they come in into their own. Yeah, and
Yeah.
that's why it's an argument, I guess, especially as you get older for single-sex education, because also women tend to do better by themselves, not having the pressure, with the opposite sex there and vice versa. You can
Yeah,
concentrate
I
better.
was. Yeah, I think it's probably a really good idea. Why not? We certainly there's room for improvement, Tim, at this point. So,
So,
yeah.
okay, Joe.
All right, brother. Well, we'll get him again next week. Thank you.
Good night. Take it easy.
You too. Bye bye.